You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Radio Rehab. Thank you for tuning in. And don't forget, you can call at any time, ask questions, make comments. We want to hear what you have to say. We want to answer your questions and concerns. Our guests, myself and WEOA, are very concerned about the substance abuse issues in our community, and we want this show to be for you and about you so that you can access ways to get some answers or to find some hope. Well, having said that, my two guests this morning, we're following the theme that WEOA started with CK Newsom Center last week on empowering our women. So all the guests this month are going to be different women that have had addictions in their life and parents that have had kids in their life that were addicted. So we're going to really focus on women this month. Welcome back. The guests I have today are incredible women. Amy has been clean and sober since December 2nd, 2006, and Devin has been clean and sober since September 2nd, 2008. So, hey, you guys, it is possible for people to get clean and sober. They're going to share their experience, strength, and hope with you today. You're going to be excited to hear from them, and don't hesitate to call. First, I'm going to start with Amy. Hi, Amy. Thank you for coming.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks a lot for having us.
Thank you. It's great
to be here.
Good. Well, so you're from Henderson, Kentucky.
Originally from Henderson, Kentucky, born and raised. Came over to Evansville about 10 years ago for career change and have since put, I guess, roots down here. So
glad you are.
Thank you. You know, you mentioned my sobriety date, December the 2nd, 2006, and wow, the last 3.5 years, where, you know, it's been a trip. But I can tell you, you know, while there's a lot of pain and not so pretty things that went on before that, you know, today I wouldn't change a thing as far as what I'm experiencing in my sobriety.
Yeah, that gratitude shows in your eyes and in your heart, both you and Devin. It just shows all over the place. But how did you ever, a nice woman like you, obviously had promise, all those things, end up, tell us about your story.
Well, you know, I feel like that I had a very blessed life. I was raised in a wonderful home, have a wonderful mother who raised myself and my younger sister, and grateful every day that she's a big part of my life. You know, I don't know, I certainly didn't intend to be an alcoholic. I didn't wake up and say, wow, I think I'm going to jump into this, you know, whole world of addiction and roll with it. You know, there's a lot of different things, I think, that lead us down that road of addiction. But for me, I think that and up until just a few years ago, I always said, I just like to party. I simply just like to party.
And what's wrong with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, laughing, having a good time, being with all my friends and,
sure.
And you know, letting all those inhibitions go, because that's what alcohol did for me. It let all of my insecurities and all of any pain that I may have been feeling and, you know, any of those things that just seemed to, you know, alcohol seemed to take those things away from me.
No wonder it's so attractive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because I don't think I'm unique in saying that. I've
right.
heard other people in recovery and their stories say the same thing. So I think I started out just being a party girl. I just, mm-hmm. I wanted to have a good time. And I would say from the time I started drinking at a young age, probably the first time that I took a drink, I was probably about 14. And I would say by the time I was 18 to, and certainly into my early 20s, I had developed a love affair with alcohol. And it says in the big book, you know, that this is a progressive disease. Mm-hmm. And as I can look back, through my drinking years. It certainly progressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, what started off with just a weekend party with my friends, by the time I was 20, you know, I was drinking four times a week, Thursday through Sunday. And into my mid-20s, I was, picking up, another day or two during the week, and ultimately it became an everyday thing. But again, one of the things that I struggled with the most in actually admitting that I was an alcoholic was that, life had always been pretty good for me. I had been blessed in so many ways. I managed to get through school and had a great career opportunity and kept good grades through school. Didn't get in a lot of trouble. The trouble came later, but in the early part, didn't get into any trouble. And I really thought my life was manageable.
Sounds like it was.
Yeah,
you were doing what you had to do, just drinking every chance you got.
Absolutely. I look back today, and it was just holding on by the, skin of my teeth, trying to take care of the responsibilities that life brings us.
Somebody just texted in a question and wanted me to ask you if at any point when you were in high school or college, anybody ever confronted you and told you you thought you drank too much?
I recall that there were a couple of times that my parents, particularly my mother, expressed some concern about what I, at the time, did not call my drinking. I called it my partying. Because that was my mindset.
That's interesting. That's true. You hear that term a lot.
Yeah, it wasn't my drinking. It was my partying. And, it had been brought to my attention at that, particularly in college. Because at that point, you're on your own. You've got a little more freedom. I had an apartment, that kind of stuff. But, I wasn't ready, Lisa, at that point in time.
Things were going too good for you.
No consequences.
No consequences.
From my actions at that point. But as we all know, if we continue on using drugs or alcohol, there are usually consequences that come from that. And for me, they weren't good consequences. I was arrested for DUI. When I was in college for drunk driving, blacked out, driving down the street and hit a parked car.
Ooh.
And, I look back on that and I go, that's just insanity. I mean, to be that sick that you would get behind the wheel of the car.
Is it when you're alcoholic, you just don't realize you're impaired? Because you get to the point where you drink and it's almost like you're normal.
Absolutely, because we talk about that for an alcoholic, that our bodies, that was another thing, our bodies do not process alcohol the same way as a normal drinker's would.
That's right.
And that took me a long time to get. I didn't look in the mirror and go, God, I'm just impaired. I can't drive.
Right.
I think for an alcoholic, our tolerance levels are higher. Mm-hmm. I think that, you can check it for yourself if you're questioning your tolerance. If you're the last person standing after a night of partying and the rest of your friends
last
are passed.
Last bring me six.
you might ought to, think about some things. But, I never really felt impaired. Alcohol did not make me feel impaired. Mm-hmm. I actually felt better. I felt on top of the world. I felt like I could do anything.
That's the big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because social drinkers or even heavy drinkers can't put that amount of alcohol away in a 24-hour period that you put away.
Yeah. You laugh about, you'll look at a person and then you can see how much alcohol they can consume, and they can be this little bitty person. And it's like,
like a Devin.
Yeah, like Devin over here. And it's like, how can you possibly put that much alcohol into your system and still be functioning?
Right.
That's
mind-boggling.
Absolutely.
It's that allergy.
Yeah.
So you didn't know when you were out partying that there was anything abnormal until you started having consequences.
No, I thought that's what everyone did.
And they do.
And they do.
In your circle.
Absolutely. And that's who you tend to
judge by, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where you put yourself a lot, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that when I was in active addiction, I chose other alcoholics to be around because that's where I was comfortable. And that's where, you know, there was a point toward the end of, before going into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, where I couldn't be around people who didn't do what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was so uncomfortable. I couldn't be with my family. I couldn't be with other friends who didn't necessarily use to the degree that I did because I wasn't comfortable there.
So your world becomes very narrow.
Becomes very small, becomes very isolatory, becomes very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Very lonely. And those last few years of drinking were probably some of the most lonely times of my life. And I realize now that I never had to go there.
Yeah.
I never had to go there, you know. But, you know, the drinking went on well into my 20s and well into my 30s. Mm. And, you know, 3 years ago, I hit a bottom. The disease turned on me. The disease of alcoholism turned on me. What used to be just, you know, party girl Amy, I couldn't get that buzz anymore. I couldn't get that high that I was getting previously, but yet I kept putting alcohol in my system every day. And it became very frustrating. And when the alcohol quit working for me is when that bottom came, you know, when the world kind of crashed around me, when I knew that I had a problem with alcohol, but because that physical allergy and mental obsession with taking that drink had so taken over my core being, I could not stop. I had to have that drink.
In spite of your job, in spite of your daughter, in spite of everything. Wow.
Everything. And I lied to myself. You know, I think that's one thing that addicts and alcoholics are good at when we're in addiction, active addiction, is, you know, we lie to ourselves. You know, I would convince myself that I was doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. I was doing what I was supposed to be doing as at this age, you know, to be this age of a woman and this point in my life. I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing. I'm taking care of my child. I'm going to work every day. I'm
looking real functional on the outside.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And drowning on the inside.
Dying on the inside. Mm. Absolutely dying on the inside. And today I can look back and go, I certainly was not the mother that I
thought
needed to be.
Yeah.
I certainly was not the employee I needed to be. I was nothing that I had convinced myself that I was.
Mm-hmm. That's delusional.
Yeah, that's delusional, absolutely.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's...
takes a good woman down fast.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the
other thing. And alcoholism progresses quicker with women than with men, and with teenagers, Devin. It progresses quicker also. Isn't that interesting?
That's odd, isn't it? But it's true.
Lean body mass of women, yeah.
Because I would say that the drinking for me, it ate my lunch really fast. I mean, within, I would say, the last 5 years prior to seeking help, I mean, it was just, I mean, like on a,
hell on earth,
like on a racetrack, you
wow.
know. I was just spiraling down and down and down, faster and faster. And, you know, it's...
Did you know it? Was the denial then and the defensiveness, if somebody brought it up, were you starting to know deep down, but yet deny it and defend it? And
yeah, the intervention in the, you know, in the early part of my addiction, like early 20s, I was very defensive. You couldn't mention anything to me about having a drinking problem without me immediately going into a rage. And that went on, the denial part went on for many, many years, and it kept me drinking daily for many, many years. And yeah, you know, you asked me, did I know? Yeah, I knew. I knew I had a drinking problem. I knew in the, somewhere deep inside of me, I knew that other people didn't drink
something
like
right.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could, you know, if I could get out of my little, if I could get out of myself and out of my little safe haven of my friends who did the same thing, I could look at other people and tell that other people didn't drink like I drank.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's age specific. I don't think you have to be a certain age to figure that out. I think you have to get real. I mm-hmm. think you have to kind of, you know, soul search a little bit to mm-hmm. kind of get to that realization. But, yeah, I knew.
Incredible.
Yeah. I knew that I didn't do things like other people did, like that normal mm-hmm. drinkers did. So, and, you know, I'll be the first to tell you, and not to take away from the wonderful world of recovery, I mean, not to take away from that at all. But, you know, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to admit that you are an alcoholic. It's hard to admit that you're a drug addict. And
especially when it means we have to stop if we admit it. That's really the hard part.
Yeah, I can remember, and this was just a couple of years ago before that I hit that brick wall that, I'm well into my 30s at this point, and my mom says to me one day, she says, Amy, do you think that you're ever going to, because at this point she had started referring to my drinking as my partying because I had, you know, coined that for mm-hmm. so many years. And she said, you think you're going to get too old to party? And I'm like, oh, no.
No.
I'll never get too old to party.
No way.
And I may have not. Go ahead.
Oh, somebody's calling in, I think. Just a second. Hi. Is somebody on the show? Hello? Are you there? Do you have a question, comment? I guess not.
Okay.
Well, it's time for a break anyway. So if you're trying to call in with a question or comment, don't go away. Amy, thank you for your sincerity, your honesty.
Evansville, did you know that Spuds and Stuff on the West Side is the best place in town for a fast, filling, and just freaking awesome lunch? Spuds and Stuff has the food you crave. Over 30 different Titanic-sized taters piled high enough to please even the hungriest of the hungry, including the mouth-watering chicken and broccoli spud, a buttery baked potato covered in cheddar cheese sauce and topped with steamed broccoli, juicy grilled chicken, and bits of real bacon. Not in the mood for a baked potato? Try a traditional gyro pita or an 8-inch Philly cheesesteak sub. Whatever your taste, Spuds and Stuff on Evansville's West Side has something great for you. So come on into Spuds and Stuff for lunch today. Baked potatoes, subs, pitas, salads, brownies, we have it all. It's easy to see why everyone loves Spuds and Stuff. So come dine in, call ahead for carryout, or get a freshly baked potato delivered to your door. See our full menu and order online at spudsandstuff.com. Located at 5225 Pearl Drive across from the West Side Walmart.
Merry Christmas!
Every Wednesday, the Tom Joyner Morning Show grants another Christmas wish.
Please, 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 Mr. Joyner, I keep praying that you see my letter and grant my Christmas wish because I really need it. Tamika, gotcha. Merry Christmas.
The Christmas Wish happens every Wednesday morning on the TJMS.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
I think we are back on the air. We are laughing and having a good time, which is one of the things sobriety affords us, is the ability to laugh and enjoy other people's company, being clean and sober instead of drunk and partying and stoned. So now we're going to introduce you to Devin, who is getting ready to go into the Navy. just finishing up her high school career and got clean and sober and can speak definitely to the young culture and the young world of a woman that struggled with addiction to everything and now recovery. Hi, Devin.
Hey, Lisa. How's it going?
Great, great. Thanks for coming. I hope your grandma's listening today. I love Delia.
Oh, I told her I was going to be on here, and you know anything having to do with Lisa's side, she's all about it.
So she'll be listening. Delia. I bet she's proud of you, but it took you a while to get here, too. So.
It did. It definitely took its time. It's definitely been, you know, it's had its struggles, but recovery has been a beautiful thing. You know, I wouldn't trade one of my worst days now for one of my best days then, you know, just the meaning of life and what it means to me today. You know, I never noticed, like, the sun before until I get sober. And
no kidding.
It's a beautiful way to live.
So you were in a fog all through high school, huh?
It was one big fog. I think it's the best way, you know. It's so funny because anytime I talk about it, you know, I don't really remember a whole lot about that period of my life. I remember the feelings and I remember the thoughts, but I can't tell you where I was or what I was doing on any given day.
So you weren't partying, you were fogging.
I was fogging. You know, I probably had my party times for about the first month of my drinking, and I was definitely the isolating drinker and user. I didn't want to share with anyone, really. That's just my selfish alcoholism. You know, I didn't want to share anything I had. So
you did it alone a lot, huh?
I did it alone. You know, when I first got started drinking, it was always very accepted. It's always been an accepted thing in my family. And, you know, but once that, I feel like there's this catalytic moment where, you know, from that point on, every time I drank or used, I drank to get drunk. I drank to not be there. And, you know, I can really relate to a lot of what Amy talks about because I never looked at alcohol or drugs as an impairment. It was always, I felt bulletproof, you know, I felt better than, you know, I went from all that self-loathing and that insecurity to, you know, feeling bulletproof, feeling on top of the world, you know, all those fears.
Who wouldn't want that, really?
Exactly.
And especially when you're a teenager.
Exactly. And, you know, after that first taste of that, that's what I chased the rest of the time I was drinking. But, you
know. So was alcohol your main thing, or did you?
Alcohol and opiates. I was a big pill popper and liked to mix my toxins, you know.
Jeez.
And that's what my life became really quickly. I believe it's very true that women progress in this disease so quickly because I know from the day I had that first real drunk till I got sober, you know, from that point on, I drank for those feelings. You know, I could never understand, and I still don't to this day, the whole, you know, sitting back and having a beer and watching a football game. It's like, that would just make me angry.
Moderate,
you know,
drinking.
If I'm not getting drunk, I'm just going to be angry. So.
Yeah. Why waste the time?
Exactly. It's a waste of alcohol. So, you know, but I just.
So did you know that your using and drinking was different than other high school kids? Or did you think it was normal?
You know, I think it's true that we tend to. At least for me as an alcoholic, I tend to gravitate towards people who drink like I do.
Mm-hmm.
And my select few friends I was willing to share my alcohol with, you know, we all drank the same and we'd joke about it. Like, oh, I'm an alcoholic. Give me another shot, you know.
Yeah.
And it became more of a joke. It's like I always knew that something was just off about me. That piece of the puzzle was missing. But I refused to accept that it was alcohol. I think that was my big problem. And eventually getting better is that I knew, but I refused to accept it because if I accepted it, I had to do something about
it. Sure. Now, the pills and the pot, though, you had to have known that was illegal and that was...
Yeah, and, you know, right. Once again, I think it kind of contributed to that whole bulletproof thing,
yeah.
You know? I lived in so much fear and so much darkness that I would do anything to feel as good as, you know? And I found a lot of... You know, honestly, I think it was a big facade for me. I used it to make me someone who I wasn't, you know, to be that, you know, be able to stand with the big boys and be tough, and it just isn't who I am. And but, you know, pills and pot gave me what I needed to, you know, fit into that facade and wear that mask. And that's why I used to, you know, get from day to day for a really long time. You know, it's...
How did you end up stopping?
You know, honestly, I think for me, I had to hit that bottom. The big book talks about incomprehensible demoralization. And I love that term because I think that's exactly where I was. I was confronted by an old teacher of mine who had been sober for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had people telling me, you know, through my using, you might have a problem. You know, you might drink a little too much, you know. And people, the hand, you know, what hurts today is that so many times through my path, people held out their hand to try to help me. But I refused that help. You know, I didn't want to get better. And for me, I had to really want it. And getting to that point of incomprehensible demoralization, I was willing to do anything to not feel how I was feeling, even if that meant taking away what, you know, alcohol and drugs, which had become like my best friend, you know.
Is that with you too, Amy? It almost becomes your best friend.
It absolutely.
I mean, you'll defend it. You'll fight for it. You're loyal to it almost.
And truly, without help, you'll die for it. Without help, you will die for it.
Yeah, you're right.
And if you're an addict or alcoholic, that's the path you're on.
Jeez.
It's like your best friend and your worst enemy.
Seems so obvious, doesn't it, when we're clean and sober? But it just seems so obvious. But it's not, is it?
It's cunning, baffling, and powerful.
Exactly what I was about to say. It takes you for a whirlwind, man. I really felt like, you know, when I got to the point where I was willing to try to get sober, and one of my friends came over and we got rid of all my pills and all my pot and anything I had left, like, I hadn't cried in over a year, and I just bawled because it was like losing the love of my life. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, I actually, like, mourned it.
Like a divorce,
yeah.
Yeah. Did you go through withdrawal?
I did. I ended up not going to treatment or anything. I didn't have insurance at the time, and, you know, I'd been going to meetings. I had withdrawal for about a month, and just the shakes and cold sweats and dry heaving and all that fun stuff, you know.
But you went through it.
I did. Somehow I made it through it. And
people do. I mean, people go to jail strung out like that and go into a jail cell, and they withdraw.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Was your withdrawal from alcohol rough too?
Yeah, it was rough. I spent about 9 days in detox. And it was yuck. It's not a great experience, you know. But the great thing is, after the sweating and the shaking and the cramping, you know, I could remember, mm-hmm. you know, the sweating and the leg cramps, you know. But mm-hmm. when you start to come away from that, when the fog starts to clear, it's kind of cool.
Somebody said it's like in The Wizard of Oz when it goes from black and white into
color. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you all heard that?
Yeah.
It's that kind of transformation.
Yeah. And you hear about people seeing colors. I mean, you know, we see in color. Mm-hmm. I see in color. But, wow, I did not see in color until I got out of that, you know, when I finally got all the alcohol out of my system. And when, you know, I finally started to clean up a little bit. And actually the world in and of itself looked different.
For sure.
Brighter.
It did look brighter.
And the colors. And it's so funny because just like you go into that fog and it's like none of that stuff really matters, you know.
You don't even
nature
know what you're missing.
And birds singing and stuff like that. You know, it sounds kind of goofy, but it's like you spend so much time in that fog that you don't realize those things anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I'd moved towards the end of my drinking process. My family and I had, and we had put this potted plant in my room. And, you know, I'd been there since we moved in. You know, I spent a couple more months drinking at that new residence, and then I get sober. And I remember waking up one morning and being so freaked out by who put a potted plant in my room in the middle of the night. Like, extremely afraid by this.
Just paranoid? You mean you didn't know?
And I just didn't even notice it. And it'd been there for months, you know. It's like little things that just, you know, you didn't care enough about to take the time to notice, you know.
I guess especially your family.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
With incredibly excited women about their sobriety, the hell they lived through and came out of on the other end, thanks to a lot of support and recovery and meetings. And they're here to share with us today, and I'm excited to have them because they are happy about being clean and sober, not just clean and sober, and they're going to make me laugh, so forgive me if I crack up here. You guys laugh a lot in sobriety, don't you?
Absolutely.
We do. Wow.
Absolutely.
You know, how do you get to that in sobriety?
You know what I have found, Lisa, is that I thought when I quit drinking, and drugs were a little bit a part of my story too, but when I quit using, when I quit putting substances in my body to alter the way I feel, I thought that I wouldn't be the same person. I thought that I would never laugh again. I thought I wouldn't belly laugh like you do when you're really drunk mm-hmm. about something stupid, mm-hmm. like somebody yep. falling down or something.
Off the bleachers or something.
Off, yeah. And, you know, I have found I actually laugh more in sobriety and find more joy and things to laugh about.
Yeah.
In sobriety.
And was that attractive to you guys about sobriety that people were laughing?
I thought they were crazy at first.
Well, at first, it's funny because I was just thinking about this when I've known Amy since I first got sober, and I'd walk into meetings and she'd just be laughing mm-hmm. so loud
and you can hear her
mad. I was like, what does she have to laugh about? I have to stay sober, but it's contagious. Mm-hmm. You know, you stick around long enough and, you know, if I didn't laugh as much as I did today and wasn't as happy as I am today, you know, I don't think I'd stay sober, you know?
How do you guys then get people to want to go to AA? Because I think they do think AA is for the lowlifes or it's not fun in there. How do you get people to want to go and get better and get clean and sober and go to meetings?
Well, you know, addiction is a very personal disease.
Yes.
It is for me. I don't know that necessarily anyone could have attracted me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to want to feel differently than what I was feeling. I had to want to face myself and change. Mm. But I do think that today, every person that I meet in recovery, and there's a lot of people mm-hmm. in recovery. That's the other thing that blows my mind.
There's so
many people, even in just Evansville, and it's all different classes and all different races. And I just, you know, it blows my mind sometimes, you know, when I find out, oh, wow, you're a recovering alcoholic too. I think all of us who have taken this journey, we get to set an example in our daily lives for perhaps that other addict or alcoholic that's out there.
Good point. Yeah, I think we have to take it that seriously. I think we have a call now again. Let me see. Hi, welcome to Radio Rehab.
Hi, I have a question.
Oh, hi, sure.
Hey, I was wondering if a person is thinking about getting sober, where would be a good place to go?
Great question. Let's ask our experts. Okay.
There's several good meetings around the area. There's the Old Stone 3 off of Walnut.
And Evans. Walnut and Evans.
Walnut and Evans has a Friday night women's meeting at 7:30. That's where I started my sobriety at.
At a women's meeting?
And it's a women's meeting, and just the fellowship is a really great place to get started off. Very welcoming.
Are there other women's meetings in town?
Absolutely.
Newburgh, I know, has one on
Newburgh at Kiwanis. Has one on, I believe, Monday nights at 7:30. But, you know, Devin and I each have what we call a home group, which is where we go, barring any major catastrophes in our life, and sometimes when we are having major catastrophes, actually. Mm-hmm. But we have home groups, and Devin mentioned the Friday night women's meeting at Old Stone 3. Starts at 7:30. That's my home group. Devin, your home group is which one?
My home group is the Women in Sobriety. It meets on Wednesday nights at 6:30, and it's on the corner of First Avenue and Virginia at the First Presbyterian Church. It's a big book in 12 and 12, and that's also a really good women's meeting if you're looking for fellowship and support.
And the one thing I'll say is, and I go to different meetings. I go to meetings where there's men and women. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I have done and I think has played a huge role in keeping me clean and sober is I've stuck with the women. I go to the women's meetings. I stay close to the women because I have found that, you know, if we have a lot in common, and it's a lot easier, I think, to open up, it seems, when you're in a room of other women.
Well, Dee was here last week for Radio Rehab, the director of the YWCA, Substance Abuse Program for Women, and she said the number one challenge these women have is they don't want to hang with other women.
Yeah, you hear that a lot in meetings.
They don't want to be with other women. I don't know, caller, if you're that way, and go to some mixed meetings for sure if that's what it takes. But do you guys sense that too? A lot of women don't trust other women.
We don't like, I mean, I wasn't crazy about, I didn't really like, you know, thinking, I don't want to go hang out with a bunch of women.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, geez, Louise, I am a woman. I've got what they've got. I don't need, you know, it's that kind of thing, you know? Boy, did I have a lot to learn, right?
So a lot of women are really starving for a relationship, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe the romance thing. And
you're not going to find, I mean, you know, that's not why you should go to a meeting, though.
Right, right. Yeah, true.
So, caller, did we help you at all?
Is the caller still on there? Probably not. But are you still there, caller? So, yeah, I think that is something a lot of people call in here and ask. Where do we go? Where do we start?
Yeah, well, I mean, their central office, too. Alcoholics Anonymous has a central office, which is down here in the, I believe it's in the courts building.
Yes.
That's certainly a good place to start. I think it's like room 101. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to say which room it is.
You could call the central office.
You could call the central office.
What about parents? Where do you all think parents should go to some open AA meetings too and see if they could understand what the AA or NA groups have to offer?
I think it's awesome when parents or other loved ones of the alcoholic go to open AA meetings to kind of see. I think it helps develop a better understanding for the disease aspect of it.
Because it's a family disease.
And it is. It talks about, you know, how, like, the alcoholic is a whirlwind in their family's lives. You know, I know my disease touched more than just me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when a family member or loved one goes to an AA meeting with them, it kind of helps them to understand more. And you know, I know also Al-Anon is a very beneficial program for family members because, you know, not only are they getting, you know, the information and the understanding, but they get to, you know, us alcoholics, we tend to mess people up. And, you know, that's just the truth of it. And, you know, I've seen Al-Anon
mess some good people up.
Good
you
know,
parents.
I've seen Al-Anon work miracles in other people's lives.
Definitely.
As well.
And there's Al-Anon every day here.
Yes, ma'am.
Actually, at Old Stone, I believe there's regular Al-Anon
meetings. Columbia and Linwood, Kiwanis. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is a family disease, and it took me a long time to figure out that I thought my drinking and drugging only hurt me or impacted me. Actually, it touches everyone in our lives. I mean, people that we probably have not even had on our radar, so to speak, for a while. But I certainly think that if you have, you know, family members that want to learn more about how we alcoholics and addicts roll, that's, you know, a good place to start. But I will tell that addict or alcoholic that you don't necessarily have to have that family support to get well.
Mm-hmm. Just the willingness.
You
it sounds
have
like
some
you
willingness
do have a lot of willingness.
And, yeah.
And where could people find you? At the clubs and at the meetings?
Yeah.
Ask for Amy or ask for Devin at any of the meetings. These two,
everybody knows
these guys.
Yeah,
and
everybody
too.
Knows Devin. Yeah.
Yep.
No, it's, you know, we both attend meetings very regularly, and, you know, you can't go to a meeting too long without running into either one of us. And that's what's so awesome about this program, I feel like, is the fellowship. You know, it really is, you know, the attractiveness of this program that kept me coming back. I agree with Amy that, you know, it was a very personal thing for me, too, coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But what keeps me here, I think, a lot of the time is the fellowship, because I've learned how to live from watching women like Amy and who have been in recovery longer than I have, watching them grow. It's seen, you know, I want what they want, so I do what they do.
Sure.
Absolutely. You can always find me at the Friday night women's meeting at 7:30 at Old Stone. I try to never to miss that meeting, and that's where my sponsor is, and that's where a lot of sobriety is. You know, that's one of the reasons that keep me going back to that meeting is because there's a lot of women there that, as Devin said, have what I want. We were trying to add up the years of sobriety in there. And it's just incredible.
Hundreds.
It's hundreds of years of women who have changed their lives and have gone down the same path that I've gone down.
Right.
So I'm going to go. That's where you can find me.
Absolutely. You know what? We could talk forever. You guys have just been incredible guests for Radio Rehab. I learn so much every time we do this on Saturdays. If any of you in the audience or in the community want to know more about where to find Devin or Amy, you can contact WEOA anytime, and we will find them, and they will call you and answer to you. So don't hesitate to make that first call or even second call. Don't ever give up. Because these two, it took a lot of rounds, didn't it, for you guys before you finally surrendered. So definitely don't give up.
Absolutely.
Anything in closing either of you want to say before?
I just want to emphasize on that. Don't give up. You know, the hope is there. It's just try to come into it with, you know, open-mindedness and willingness. And it, you know, I can promise you, you know, if you don't like what you find in the program or in whichever recovery you are guided towards, you know, all your misery and all that stuff will be given right back to you. So just, you know, try to stick around. And
they'll gladly refund your misery.
They'll gladly refund your misery to you. So.
Awesome. Thank you.
Lisa, I just want to say thanks for having both of us today. It's been a lot of fun. And
it goes too fast.
It does. The hour goes really fast. But the 12 steps, there's all kinds of 12-step programs. And I would not say that I ever thought that I would be a 12-step person, but they have become a way of life for me. And it took a lot of pain and a lot of doing a lot of bad things in order to get to that point. But the 12 steps do work, and they are incorporated. At least I try to incorporate them in every aspect of my life. And it has it keeps me clean. It keeps me sober. It keeps my mind where my feet are, and you know that's tough for me to stay where, keep my head where my feet are. And I feel like that Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of it, is just a blessing. It is a gift that has been given to us. And if you are thinking that maybe you do have a problem, if someone is pointing out to you that perhaps you have a problem, come by Old Stone, sit in a meeting, check it out. You may be a little uncomfortable at first, but you might hear something that could change your life.
Absolutely. What a great, great way to end. Thank you both for your level of honesty and your sincerity. Radio Rehab, if you want to hear them on the World Wide Web, you can go to lisaseifcares.net, hit podcast, and you can hear Amy and Devin again. They are incredible and fun. Thank you again for your honesty and sincerity, you two. You all in the radio land world, thank you for tuning in and supporting this show. We hope that it's made a difference for somebody. It sure has for us. And don't forget, between now and next week, to do the next right thing.
WEOA, Evansville, Henderson.